Today is September 27th. I'm Mildred Rubenstein recording for Oral History Number 2 for the National Council of Jewish Women. We are recording Lewis Reisenstein, and Jeanette Kelson is taking notes with me today. Mr. Reisenstein, some of the questions, some of the blanks that we have to fill in doing your family tree, we do not have the names of your brothers' wives.
My brothers' wives?
Yes.
The one, I think I told you, was Charlie's wife, was Frieda Silverman, the sister of Dr. Alexander Silverman, who married my sister.
I believe we have that one. What about the other brother?
Harry Reisenstein married Estelle Isaacs, of the Isaacs family. Her brother was Leo and Lou and several others.
All right, so there was just the two, your two brothers.
One sister.
And the sister. And the sister's husband's name was?
Dr. Alex Silverman.
Right. And the name of your daughter-in-law, we don't have that to fill in.
My daughter-in-law, mm-hmm. Maxine.
Maxine. All right, fine. The other question that came up was, we don't have your early education. Where did you go to elementary school?
I went to the Second Ward, now the Columbus School, and the old Second Ward of North Allegheny, and subsequently 4 years in Allegheny High School.
Very good. You mentioned in one of the tapes that you attend bank meetings. What is the bank that you are affiliated with, and what is the nature of that affiliation?
I was executive vice president of the Western Pennsylvania National Bank. Now it's called Equibank.
And you still attend regular...
I'm on their advisory board.
And you attend regular meetings, right? Now, we have a big blank when it comes to the Board of Education, and we realize that you had quite a long list of...
Had two appointments to the board. And refused the third because the was impossible to do the job that I thought should be done, and my lack of hearing was a handicap.
Could you give us the years that you were on the board?
I think it was from 19...
50, do you recall who was superintendent?
I think it's 51 to 63.
Do you recall who was superintendent at that time?
Well, we were, the first principal was well, he was there a short time. Then we had what's the fellow's name? Calvin Gross.
Calvin Gross.
Who left us to go to
New York, I think.
New York, where they cut his throat.
Right.
And he was succeeded by Sidney P. Marlin Jr., who then became went to Washington as the National Education Director.
What was your position?
What was my what?
What was your position on the board?
Just an ordinary board member, common garden variety.
Could you tell us some of the experiences that you had as you served on this committee? Because you did cover...
Well, we tried to integrate the schools. And to make some progress, but there's a lot yet to be made.
Who were some of your co-board members?
William Ray, Maxine Aaron, Richard Jones, Gladys McNary.
Who is now the president?
No, she's not retired, but she was.
She was.
Displaced by. Yes. What the hell is her name? Helen McNamara.
Did you enjoy that experience? Did you?
It was challenging, but. There's a lot of things you'd like to have done, but you couldn't because of the character of the board.
The other problem we couldn't quite, from our past conversation, you told us about a black and white club that you belonged to.
That was ages ago. That was started by J. Leonard Levy.
What was the purpose of it?
Huh?
What was the purpose of it?
Well, they were all boys that had just been confirmed, and the idea was to get a group together that would promise to be just as, pure or faithful to their obligations as the woman they expected to marry. But they divided themselves into three groups, the older group, the middle group, and the younger group. Several people, like Jacob Davis and myself, belonged to the middle group. And when we found that the older boys weren't living up to their promise, we busted it up and made the new club of Pittsburgh, and subsequently became part of Hay Race Fraternity. Well, that was ages ago.
Was the morality necessary because of this? Did this club, was it an outgrowth of the fact that they needed something like this?
Dr. Levy thought they did.
How did you feel about it?
Huh?
How did you feel about it?
I agreed entirely.
So you were on his side, is that
huh?
right? You were on Dr. Levy's side.
Oh, sure.
Could you describe some of the personalities that we have mentioned in our past interviews? Could you tell us something about Leon Falk Sr.?
Leon Falk Sr. was a buddy of E.T. Weir, who established Worden Steel, later National Steel, and he was responsible for taking Dr. Levy's recommendation and started me on my work in with Falk Company in Carnegie. They didn't overpay me at the time.
What kind of a man was Leon Falk Sr.?
He was a very charitable man, not a good businessman, not a deep thinker, but he was very close to J. Leonard Levy, and under his guidance established a lot of eleemosynary projects.
He was your employer, and you got along well with him?
Well, he was not directly, indirectly.
Indirectly. And you had a good relationship?
Very. And later on, in 1924, in 1920, I went up to Minneapolis and became a baker. I think I mentioned
yes,
that.
Yes, I think we have that. Yes.
And when I came back, I was, worked for a year and a half or 2 years with the Falk American Potato Flour Corporation. And then that busted up, and I went with Falk Company.
Tell us about Leon Falk Jr.
He and I have been close friends ever since he bought an interest in Falk Company.
And what kind of person is he?
He's a very fine gentleman and charitable.
Could you tell us something about the late Charles Rosenblum?
The what?
The late Charles Rosenblum.
Sure, Charlie was initially, along with Alec Lowenthal, put up the money, some of the money, to enable me to start Falk & Company in 1924.
What kind of a person was he? Could you describe him?
Charlie was deeply interested in Israel, charitable, and a good guy generally.
You kept good
company. He didn't have the mentality that Alec Lowenthal had, and was influenced a great deal by Alec.
Tell us about Alec Lowenthal.
Well, he went to Yale with Charlie and Leon. They're about the same age. And he was a brilliant mind and helped work his way through Yale by tutoring less gifted students.
Tell us something about your brother-in-law, Joseph Silverstein.
Joe was in the paper business, ex-football player, basketball player, a diamond in the rough, so to speak. And
he
was a very good businessman. He established three businesses, and I miss him greatly.
You were good friends, more so than just a brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Mrs. Sadie Alter.
She was my sister-in-law and was the owner of the Jewish Criterion after her husband died, David Alter, and also she owned the Baltimore Times, which is a similar paper in Baltimore. She established a good relationship with the Federation and sold out the Criterion to the Federation, leaving as her estate the Baltimore Times.
How did she become owner of the Jewish Criterion?
When her husband died, he had founded.
In other words, that was just an inheritance that she...
My inheritance.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Maurice Taylor. What
I remember him reasonably well. He was a director before Bob Hiller, and
director of the Federation.
Federation. I was friendly with him, but not as close as I was to Hiller.
And he was director of that the late 20s, wasn't he?
30s.
What about Sidney Stark?
Who?
Sidney Stark.
What about him?
Do you have any description of him?
Well, we were friends. He owned the laundry business of Penn Overall and worked for the Federation. Got himself in trouble a couple of times with the law, but got out of it all right because of the charitable work he did. They were easy on him.
Did you work together in the Federation with him at the same time, or was there?
Yeah, we worked at the same time, but not together.
There were several movements that your wife was very, very active in. One of them that we haven't talked about was the peace movement or the Bundles for Britain.
No, she wasn't mixed up in that.
She wasn't mixed up in that. All right. Tell us about the civil rights influence and the League crisis.
She was the founder of the Human Relations Commission in Pittsburgh. She was very close, as I was also, with Dave Lawrence. And she influenced him to establish the Human Relations Commission, both in Pittsburgh and later on in Harrisburg for this whole state. We went to Israel together, Mr. and Mrs. Lawrence and Florence and I. And
what year was this?
Oh, about, I should know. I would say about...
While he was still mayor?
Huh?
While he was still mayor?
He was governor then.
Governor?
I think it was about 19... in the 50s sometime.
Mm-hmm. We have discussed the merger of the Irene Coffin and the Y. Let us just point out a few other things that we wanted to get on record. What was the purpose of the merger?
Well, there had been competition between the local and the overseas. A local and the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies and overseas United Jewish Fund. So neither of them reached their potential because they were, instead of spending time doing good, they spent a lot of time fighting with each other.
Well, was there a duplication of services?
No.
Each one had their own function?
The conflict was in the allocation of the drives and the allocation of funds. And I was convinced that they would be better off merged. And so they merged them, made me the first president.
In other words, the merger was your idea?
Well, I wouldn't say it was solely my idea. I was one of a group that urged it.
Who were in the group?
Well, Lynn Falk and the professionals were in favor of it.
And name some of the professionals at the time.
Huh?
Who were the professionals at the time?
Bob Hiller and he was the driving force.
Would you say that the Y was run by lay people, and the merger was bringing more professionals into the atmosphere.
The Y was dominated to a great degree by Hyman Rogow, and who
dominated the Emma Farm group?
Well, Emma Farm was just a small.
Or the Irene Kaufman.
Who
dominated that group?
Fellows like Donald Stein first and several other. I'm trying to think of who was the main guy. Well, in any event, the merger worked out very well, and after a year or two, no one would have moved back and separate them again. I was succeeded in that by Lou Kaplan.
During this battle for merger, who was opposed to the idea?
Well,
where was your opposition?
I would say several people, among whom was Charlie Rosenblum and the pro-Israel people who feared that too much would go to Israel, and also some of the local people for the opposite reason.
Is there any truth to the theory that the Y leadership was reluctant to apply the community chest for their funds?
Some of them were, but they shouldn't have been.
Since the merger, you felt the merger was good. But since the merger, has there been any lack of interest in leadership in the particular groups?
No, I would say not. There still is rivalry to see who could be the big shot. Harry Savage, for example, who just is in the process of being buried now, was very interested and worked hard for the Y.
He was interested in continuing as far as the Y was concerned, but what about the merger?
Well, he agreed with the merger.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other things that we've left out? I think I've tried to put this all together in one package now. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us that we may have skipped?
I don't know.
Can you think of anything that we
have covered? Anything that you felt that we hadn't gotten?
It was just that when we went over our notes, there were a few things that we wanted clarified. So we thank you once again for giving us this much-needed time, and we hope we won't have to bother you.
Well, you have something to drink.
Thank you very much.
Huh?